Matthew chapter 22, starting at verse number 34. Matthew chapter 22, starting at verse number 34. It says, when the Pharisees heard that he had silenced the Sadducees, they gathered together, and one of them, a lawyer, asked him a question to test him. Teacher, which commandment in the law is the greatest? He, Jesus, said to him, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind. This is the greatest and first commandment. And the second is like it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. On these two commandments hang all the law and the prophets. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. Neighbors. Think about that for a moment. Think about the word neighbors for a moment. What if I asked you to name the neighbors on either side of your home or your apartment? How would you do? Now, reflecting on that question for a moment, my mind is actually brought back to my childhood home. I grew up in Buffalo, New York, on Herman Street, 189 Herman Street. This is a picture of my childhood home that I just got off of Google Maps a few days ago. Google Images and Google Satellites, a pretty amazing tool. But that's my old house. Now, the first thing that I notice when I look at my old house is that there are no houses next to it. That's not how it was when I grew up there. There were several houses that were next to my house. In fact, if I remember correctly, if you're looking at my house to the right, my neighbor, it was Miss Doris and Mr. Phil. Miss Doris would always give me candy. Next door to that house, there was a field. There was a huge house there years ago, but when I was a young kid, the house was torn down. But then there was another house next to that field, and I had some friends there, Marvina and Candy and Preston and Byron and Myron. They lived in that house. And next door to that house were the Grahams, you know, Delorious Graham, that was a friend of mine, her dad, Bud Graham, and her mother, Maxine. And next to them was another good friend of mine. His name was Charles. Charles was in the Navy. Sadly, several years ago, he died on the ship after having a massive heart attack. And that was the last house on that side of the street. To the left, where there's a field there right now, there was a house there, and the people that used to live there was a guy by the name of Rodney and his wife, Deborah. I remember them vividly because Deborah was the first hearing impaired person I had ever met. She was deaf, and I remember she would come over to our house sometimes to ask for things, and she would write it down because we didn't know sign language. And next to that house was Mr. and Mrs. Phelps, and Mr. Phelps had a collision shop. There was a garage there, and so his backyard were full of cars and boats, and he had a shop there where he would paint the cars. And next to their house, there was a family called the Young family. I used to have a friend there, a guy by the name of Herman, who lived on Herman Street, and his brother Queet. My brother was close to Herman, I was close to Queet. They moved out, and then another woman moved there. Her name was Melanie, and she lived there for several years. And next to her was Mr. Scales, and my dad was really good friends with him. He used to call him Champ. And then next to him was the Amin family. They were an Islamic family. Rockmar was a good friend of mine. We used to play together. And Takia, his sister, was a friend of my cousin. They used to play together. And next to them was my good friend OJ and Edward. We play with them. I found out that my friend OJ, that lived on that street, that grew up with me, we grew up playing together as kids, he lives in Reynoldsburg. How does that happen? And then next to them, there was a family. I can't quite remember that family. But if you go across the street, I remember that if you go two houses down, there was a guy by the name of Kalo and Cedric. They were like Herman Street legends. Everybody knew Kalo and Cedric. Kalo just passed away about 3 weeks ago. And then next to them were the Carmichael house. And they had a bunch of grandkids. And I was friends with all of them. They would come over the house from all over Buffalo. And I kind of knew all of them. And then next next to them was the Terry family. I had a best friend in that house, Derek. His last name wasn't Terry. Derek McGee is his last name. We're still friends to this day. And then next to them was the Smalls family, Daniel Smalls. And Daniel Smalls had several kids. He had Cynthia and Daniel and Tyrone and Cassandra. And next to them was another house that he owned that his daughter Cynthia lived in. And then the next house next to them, that was the Mitchell family. The Mitchell family house was directly across the street from our house. And that's where Reggie and Elton live. And then next to that house was Mo and Dot. Now, Mo was a good friend of my dad. My father's nickname was Bo. And so they would come outside and every day be like, "Hey, Bo Joe. Hey, Mo Joe." That's how they used to get him. Then next to them were the Goodsons family. Mary Alice Goodson used to watch me as a kid. My mother would go to work and drop me off across the street and she would watch me. Then there was a house in the back and there was the Kirkwoods. And you had Doris Kirkwood and Michael Kirkwood and my sister's best friend Doris Kirkwood lived in the back. And then next to them were the Bennetts. And then there were a ton of Bennetts. There was Warren Bennett and Michael Bennett and Marvin. Then next to that house was their Mrs. Bennett's daughter, Annette. And then next to her was Lady Calhoun. That's what we called her, Lady Calhoun. Then next to her was Miss Elsie. And then next to that house were the Pittmans. I remember all of those neighbors. Now, ask me if I know the names of my neighbors right now. At our current house, if you're looking at our house, I know the names of our neighbors to the left, Brian and Stacy, but I don't know the names of the neighbors to the right. They just moved in a couple years ago, and I waved to them. I like them. Their Bhutanese Nepali family, a very large family. I have no clue any of their names. I know the names of the folks who are directly across the street from us and the family that's next to them, but we have a pretty small neighborhood. And I hardly know the names of our neighbors, and we've been there for 18 years. Now, am I unique in that? Am I the only one that hardly know my neighbors? What is it about years ago that I practically knew everyone on my street and could tell you stories of interactions, but now I hardly know my neighbors. I still see my old neighbors. When my old neighbors pass away from Herman Street on Facebook, you know, they share everyone from Herman Street. We all kind of get together on Facebook and tell stories about our time on Herman Street. Like that's what we did. We knew the names of our neighbors. We knew the names of their families. We were in each other's lives. Now, not only do I not hardly know the names of my neighbors, I hardly even see them. We have a very quiet neighborhood, and there are many times I go outside, and I'm the only person that's outside in my neighborhood. A survey taken last year reported that only 26% know their neighbors, and nearly 16% of people don't know any names of any of their neighbors. And that number goes to about 25% when you start asking those in the millennial generation. Several have offered reasons for the decline in knowing neighbors. One, I can certainly resonate with, and probably the reason I knew most of my neighbors on my childhood street, and that is most of the services that we had in our neighborhood was in walking distance. And so the corner store or the local laundromat or the local cleaners or, you know, everything, the liquor store, it was all in walking distance of our home. And so people in passing by and walking to get these services, you couldn't help but interact with each other. But most of us now, we live in neighborhoods where if you don't have a car, you can't live in that neighborhood. And so if you're in the car, you're not having those interactions that you once had when you were walking by one another. Another reason, and I've kind of shared this in the past, is the advent of air conditioners and automatic garage door openers. Think about it. I think it was Kent a couple weeks ago, their air conditioner went out, and he was saying, "Man, How did we make it without air conditioning in the past? You know how we made it? We went outside. That's what we did, right? We sat on the porch. That's what we did. We sat on the porch. We went outside. And so when you're outside, you see people. And now with automatic garage door openers, like when you get to your house, you go in your garage and you go directly in your house. You have no reason to interact with your neighbors. Air conditioners and garage door openers. Probably one of the reasons that we quite frankly just don't know our neighbors. Now, church, rather than dwelling on the troubling trend of not knowing our neighbors, I want us, get this, I want us to explore the possibilities that God has created for us by teaching us and commanding us and prompting us to be a good neighbor. I'm talking really good neighbors, like a good neighbor State Farm is there. I'm like a good neighbor, the Church of Jesus is there. And that's exactly what I want us to explore for the next several weeks, the rest of the summer, how to activate the great command offered by Jesus. When asked, what is the greatest commandment? And then Jesus offered an answer. I hope that after a few weeks, we not only know the names of our immediate neighbors, but we are eager to get to know them and eager to love them and serve them. I hope and pray that after a few encounters with the Word of God, we will be ready to explore what it means for our church to be a good neighbor in the city of Reynoldsburg and neighboring communities. We are taking our cue from this interaction Jesus had with some experts in the law of God, the Hebrew scriptures. Many wonder if the question that was asked to Jesus was born out of pure motives, or was it another tactic to try to trap Jesus. In the first century Jewish thought, it is believed that the experts in the law viewed all God's commands as equal. They were equal in weight. So perhaps this question was a way to test Jesus's handling of the whole canon of God's laws. Often when Jesus perceived a question as a trap, Jesus would respond with another question. In Jewish teaching and rabbinical tradition, the way to note someone as being a master teacher or master rabbi is when they were asked a question, they were able to ask a question in return. It's one of the things that Jesus was doing when he was 12 years old, and all the teachers were like, how is he doing this? Because he knew the art of teaching and asking questions. But this time, even though probably a trap, Jesus actually offers an answer, a concrete answer. Jesus, what is the greatest command? You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind. This is the greatest and first commandment. And the second is like it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. In answering the question, Jesus references two passages from the Hebrew Bible, the Old Testament. The first, Deuteronomy 6, 4, and 5. We just sang a song about this. Hear, O Israel, the Lord is our God, the Lord alone. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your might. This is commonly referred to as the Shema. That is the Hebrew word for hear. The Shema is a prayer prayed frequently by Jews, for some as many as four times a day, but no less than twice a day. It is a teaching that the whole assembly of Israel was to embrace with their whole being. It is the core of their existence as the people of God. Thus, this truth would be known, recited, repeated, and taught repeatedly. Children were taught the Shema when they began to talk. As soon as they heard a baby say Dada or Abba, they began to teach them the Shema. The second command Jesus quotes is from Leviticus 19:18. Here is the quote in context with the larger command, verse number 17 of Leviticus 19. It says, "You shall not hate in your heart anyone of your kin. You shall reprove your neighbor or you will incur guilt yourself. You shall not take vengeance or bear a grudge against any of your people, but you shall love your neighbor as yourself. I am the Lord. Throughout the Levitical law, God gives commandments that center on relationships and how his people treat one another. Family, friends, neighbors, enemies, foreigners. God is not selfishly consumed with our love for him. He is intimately involved in shaping the way we love others. I believe that the way God's people love others and treat their neighbors will have profound impact on our world and on our communities. And it is so important for disciples of Jesus to know that as passionate as we are about our love for God, our love for our neighbors ought to be equal in passion. For as Jesus said, this is from the Message, these two commands are pegs. Everything in God's law and the prophets hangs from them. We cannot do life with God without doing life with other people. It is impossible to please God while disassociating ourselves with the call to love people. The Lord makes this clear in his repeated calls to his people to treat people right, to treat people with kindness, to serve their neighbors. Look at the Ten Commandments. The first four are about resonating with God. No other gods. No graven images to represent God. Don't mess with the Lord's name. Keep the Sabbath. But take a look at the remaining six, people-oriented. Honor your mother and father. Don't murder. Don't commit adultery. Don't steal. Don't lie. Don't crave or covet your neighbor's stuff. That's the starting point in the law. It goes much further. Take, for instance, just a couple chapters after the Ten Commandments were given to Moses. Here are some more laws that Moses would share with the people as they exited Egypt. Exodus 22, verse number 21. You shall not wrong or oppress a resident alien, for you were aliens in the land of Egypt. You shall not abuse any widow or orphan. If you do abuse them, when they cry out to me, I will surely heed their cry. My wrath will burn, and I will kill you with the sword, and your wives shall become widows, and your children orphans. If you lend money to people, to the poor among you, you shall not deal with them as a creditor. You shall not exact interest from them. If you take your neighbor's cloak in pawn, you shall restore it before the sun goes down, for it may be your neighbor's only clothing to use as cover. It may be your neighbor's only cover. In what else shall that person sleep? And if your neighbor cries out to me, I will listen, for I am compassionate. Take a look at Deuteronomy chapter 15, verse number 7. It says, if there is among you anyone in need, a member of your community in any of your towns within the land that the Lord your God is giving you, do not be hard-hearted or tight-fisted toward your needy neighbor. You should rather open your hand, willingly lending enough to meet the need, whatever it may be. Be careful that you do not entertain a mean thought, thinking, the seventh year, the year of remission, is near, and therefore view your needy neighbor with hostility and give nothing. Your neighbor might cry to the Lord against you, and you would incur guilt. Give liberally and be ungrudging when you do so, for on this account the Lord your God will bless you in all your work and in all that you undertake. Since there will never cease to be some in need on the earth, I therefore command you, open your hand to the poor and needy neighbor in your land. One more from Deuteronomy chapter 22, verses 1 through 4. You shall not watch your neighbor's ox or sheep straying away and ignore them. You shall take them back to their owner. If the owner does not reside near you, or you do not know who the owner is, you shall bring it to your own house, and it shall remain with you until the owner claims it. Then you shall return it. You shall do the same with a neighbor's donkey. You shall do the same with a neighbor's garment, and you shall do the same with anything else that your neighbor loses and you find. You may not withhold your help. You shall see your neighbor's donkey or ox fallen on the road and ignore it. You shall help to lift it up. That's an interesting teaching, especially if you replace ox and donkey with like pit bull. I don't know, neighbor. I saw your pit bull. You need to go get that pit bull. Church, loving God is loving others. It is the heart of God to be compassionate, giving, helpful, and neighborly. I grew up in Buffalo, as I said. I don't know if many of you know this, but Buffalo's nickname is the City of Good Neighbors. This became the official nickname of Buffalo in the 1940s, as the mayor declared it. Buffalo was a city that was known for its acceptance of people from all over the world. And even to this day, there is a rich heritage in Buffalo of Italians and Irish and Polish and African. Now, while cultural racial issues were not absent from the city of Buffalo, a spirit of being good neighbors was prevalent, and it was a prevalent idea that flooded the city. It's the reason that shooting that took place months ago in Buffalo was so hurtful. Story was that the shooter was actually there the day before, engaging with some of the shoppers at Tops. He was panhandling. And as good neighbors do, there were people who were giving him money and sharing with him. And even though he didn't look like a lot of people that lived in the neighborhood, they welcomed him. Remember the shooting at Mother Emanuel Church in Charleston, South Carolina? They were at a Bible study. It's a black church. A white guy comes in and says, "Hey, can I do church with you?" He stayed there. They invited him in like a good neighbor. And then the tragedy ensued. Good neighbors. That's Buffalo's moniker, being the city of good neighbors. The church ought to be the community's best neighbor. Let me say that again. The church in any community ought to be the community's best neighbor. A Jesus follower on any street in America should be that street's best neighbor. And so it begins, a six-week journey of exploring what it means to love God and love neighbor. Prayerfully, it will lead us as individuals to be better neighbors on our individual streets, in our communities, or our apartment buildings. Additionally, I pray that it will mean that we as a church community are exploring ways to be better neighbors in our local communities. And I pray that we are inundated with this gospel truth, that there is no loving God without loving neighbors. John chapter 1, verse number 1. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. In terms of impact, theologically, that is one of the most powerful statements in all of Scripture. It asserts the deity of Jesus. Jesus was the Word, or the Logos. And in Greek terms, that word logos referred to something otherworldly, cosmic. Equally impactful in terms of theology is John chapter 1 and verse number 14 that says, "And the Word became flesh and lived." Some of your translations will say dwelled. "The Word became flesh and lived," or dwelled among us, "and we have seen his glory, the glory as of the Father's only Son, full of grace and truth." Now the word for lived and dwelled is the Greek word skeneo. The word literally means to pitch a tent. Those of you who are into camping and you know what it means to pitch a tent, that's a temporary dwelling place for you. And that word tent in Greek conjures up the Hebrew word for tent, tabernacle. In the Old Testament, God instructed the Israelites to build a temporary tent, a tabernacle that could be set up and taken down as Israel traveled through the wilderness. The message of the tabernacle is this: where the people of the Lord are, the Lord is there with them. When they moved, God moved with them. When they set camp, God set up camp with them right in their midst. Literally, the setting up of the tent or the tabernacle was an announcement that the Lord is present. I love the way the Message translates John 14. In the Message translation, it says, "And the Word became flesh and blood and moved into the neighborhood. We saw the glory with our own eyes, the one of a kind glory, like Father, like Son, generous inside and out." Why was Jesus so popular? Why did people come to Jesus? Why were the worst sinners attracted to Jesus? Why were communities and individuals taking great risks to see Jesus and to be with Jesus? Simple. It's because Jesus moved into the neighborhood. Jesus didn't set up a lofty temple and he sat up on this high throne seat where people would have to reach like that to get to Jesus. Nope. He moved into the neighborhood and people saw him and they touched him and he became their neighbor. Why are communities growing so suspicious of church communities? I believe it's because many churches move into communities, get people to come to their churches. The church gets the community's money, and they do very little to put back into the community where they reside. As such, many communities hardly know that church even exists. Don't want that to be our postscript. I want us to be God ordained, Jesus led, and Spirit driven to be good neighbors, because there is no loving God without loving neighbors. There is no loving God without loving neighbors. So I want us, the Reynoldsburg Church, to be the very best neighbor in the city of Reynoldsburg. And over the next several weeks, we'll just explore. We'll explore what the Bible says about being good neighbors. And then we'll just explore in practical terms, ways that we can continue to be good neighbors. It was a little disheartening, you know, years ago. It's gotten better in recent years where, you know, I'm out somewhere. And I don't wear like on my chest or on a hat or some that I'm the minister at the Reynoldsburg Church of Christ. If it comes up, I'll gladly share that. But when it does come up, you know, "Yeah, I'm a minister." "Well, where's your church?" "Yeah, I preach at the Reynoldsburg Church of Christ." "Oh yeah, where's that at?" I'm talking to a Reynoldsburg resident. And so I'll usually say, "Hey, you know that really big church on Graham Road?" "Like, yeah, we're that real small one right across the street." "Oh!" Then they get it. So our marker is the Methodist Church. It's gotten better, church, because people are starting to know that we're here. And in very genuine ways, it's because we are going out of our ways to be good neighbors. And I want us to continue that. And I want us to explore that. There's going to be a guest speaker next week who's going to continue that thought. We're going to continue this thought throughout the next several weeks. That's all I have for today. We're going to sing a invitation song, Covenant of Love. It's a song about the covenant that God has established with us and sending Jesus to us, taken from that imagery of Solomon dedicating the temple. And he prayed that prayer that, God, you sent this covenant of love. And many of us wonder, how does God intend to continue to convey this covenant of love that he has established with Jesus? Well, I have an idea. I have an idea, and I think he's pretty much communicated this. He's going to use us, church. He's going to use us. The way to communicate God's covenant of love is to be a good neighbor, to love the Lord our God, to really lean into that covenant of love. Love the Lord our God with all of our heart, with all of our soul, with all of our mind, with all of our strength, and to love our neighbor as ourself. As we're singing this song, if there's a way that the church can be helpful to you through prayer, through conversation, through study. Maybe you're going through a really tough time right now. We would like to be your neighbor. If you've lost some stuff and you're having a hard time trying to get that back, let the church help. Right now, your mind just isn't where it needs to be. Your heart just isn't where it needs to be. Let the church help. We want to be your neighbor, and we want to expose you to this wonderful, beautiful covenant of love. Let's stand. Let's sing this song together.